That mines an across-the-board condemnation from Palestinian officials and groups over the Israeli army's cold-blooded murder of a journalist. The U.S. House passes a $40 billion funding bill for Ukraine, including more than $20 billion in military aid. Also in our headlines, a U.S. warship sailing through the sensitive Taiwan Strait draws a stern warning from the Chinese military. Hello and welcome, everybody, here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half-hour is Israeli forces kill a reporter working for the Qatar-based Al Jazeera TV network in the occupied West Bank. Shireen Abu Akleh was fatally shot while covering an Israeli army raid on the city of Jenin. She was a veteran Palestinian reporter for Al Jazeera's Arab language channel. The broadcaster called her killing a horrifying crime in violation of international norms. Qatar has condemned the incident. State-sponsored Israeli terrorism. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says Abu Akleh's killing lays bare the terroristic and violent nature of the occupying regime. Israeli officials say Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist, but another reporter accompanying Abu Akleh, who was also shot in the back, calls the Israeli claim an outright lie.
The occupation is murderous and criminal. They shot us for no reason. We, a group of journalists, were there wearing our full press uniform in addition to the helmets with the word press written in large letters, as big as the whole world. We were obvious. We made sure to walk right in front of the army patrols so that they can see us, and they saw us after we went to a road where there were no armed people, no civilians, and there were no shooting and no incidents there. We were shocked by the shooting. I was lucky and I turned my back when the first bullet was shot and injured my back. They wanted to kill me. I was injured in my back and the second bullet shot my colleague Shireen and caused her death. There were no armed people and we cannot put our lives in danger and say the wrong narrative. The Israeli army is a liar and criminal and despicable.
Somebody who was shot in the back by Israeli troops is now in stable condition. Meantime, the Palestinian Health Ministry says a Palestinian teenager was also fatally shot in a separate Israeli attack in the West Bank city of Al Bira. A correspondent, Mona Kandil, told us how Israeli forces treat journalists covering and trying to reveal the regime's crimes against Palestinians.
Well, we have to say that this news is really shocking for all Palestinian journalists here in the occupied territories. It's another proof that the Israeli army doesn't differentiate between journalists who try their best to reveal the Israeli crimes to the whole world. A journalist or a normal Palestinian, or for them, all the Palestinians could be targeted at the time of fighting, let's say, or Israeli incursion to any of the Palestinian areas. Many Palestinians had been wounded in several incidents. Palestinian journalists suffer suffocation every time they take part in protests and demonstrations. Many of them had been martyred. Numerous Palestinian journalists were wounded, seriously wounded during these incursions. Even at the time we Palestinian journalists tried to show the Israeli soldiers that we are a press or journalists and that we have the right, according to the international law, to cover what's going on. However, they tried to force us out of the cover and prevent us to clearly cover the clashes or their crimes.
A large-scale cyber attack has hit Israel's infrastructure, shutting down its largest transportation company. Israeli media claim the Iraqi resistance group Al-Tahira carried out the attack on the Egg Public Transportation Company. The company's websites reportedly went online, or rather offline, several times following the attack. Israel has been facing increasing cyber attacks in recent months. In April, hackers managed to shut down the website of Israel's main international airport, Ben Gurion. Tel Aviv has ordered its communications firms to bolster cybersecurity. We've reached out to political analyst Mick Napier to get his views on the latest cyber attack on Israel. He believes that the regime is vulnerable to such attacks. Take a listen.
They know that cyber warfare will play a very vital role, is already playing a vital role in conflicts around the world. So yes, Israel's vulnerable. They have walls of steel, they erect walls and barriers, and they have, you know, very powerful submarines from Germany and massively powerful technology from America. But they may be vulnerable in this field, and I think the recent attacks show that. So yes, if this capability develops, and it's a very democratizing technology, because you don't need to go to university for many years and do a PhD to develop these skills. With enough motivation and basic intelligence, some people can do this. So it's very leveling. It may make a contribution to the defeat of Israel ultimately, and it's already doing so to this degree. So yes, I think we have to welcome this, because Israel poses a threat not just to the Palestinians, not just killing journalists and so on, but it poses a threat to the and to all the peoples of the Middle East, and it has an appetite beyond Palestine's borders. So if anyone from Iraq or elsewhere can contribute to the defeat of Israel, to the weakening of Israel, to attack Israel in this way, then that's surely to be welcomed, not just by the Palestinian people, but by the peoples across the region.
The U.S. House approves an additional $40 billion in financial and military aid for Ukraine to help it in the ongoing war with Russia. The aid package, which needs the Senate approval, is more than the U.S. president had initially requested from lawmakers. If approved, this would push the U.S. aid for Ukraine to over $50 billion since the launch of the Russian military operation there. The figure is about $6 billion more than the total U.S. spending on all its foreign and military aid in 2019. Moscow has repeatedly warned that such aid by the U.S. and its European allies would only worsen the situation. The Kremlin has also warned that the arming of Ukraine may lead to a direct confrontation between Russia and the West. We've talked to former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer Scott Bennett to get more on Washington's latest decision to provide Ukraine with extra financial and military aid. Let's take a listen.
I truly think they are beyond any rational, sane behavior. I think they are so pathologically delusional and wanting to believe their own lies that they engage in this silly lend-lease and exorbitant $40 billion sale of weapons that will only be destroyed the moment they hit the ground of Ukraine or are loaded onto a ship or transported. The Russians will annihilate every single weapon.
The war between Russia and Ukraine is in its 76th day, but the United States says the conflict may turn into a war of attrition.
The next month or two of fighting will be significant as the Russians attempt to reinvigorate their efforts. But even if they are successful, we are not confident that the fight in the Donbas will effectively end the war. We assess President Putin is preparing for a prolonged conflict in Ukraine, during which he still intends to achieve goals beyond the Donbas.
The U.S. Director of National Intelligence says she sees no path forward for the peace talks between Moscow and Kiev, at least in the short term. The U.S. official also predicts the fighting could take unpredictable turns over the next few months. Meantime, Russia's defense ministry says it has thwarted Ukrainian efforts to recapture Snake Island, located in the Black Sea. According to the ministry, the Russian army inflicted heavy casualties and damage on enemy forces in the area. Data from the United Nations show the war has so far displaced over 8 million Ukrainians internally. This on top of nearly 6 million others who've already left the country. Ukraine says it will suspend the use of a transit point for some Russian gas headed to Europe and switch the flow to a new point. Russia says the move is essential and impossible. Kiev says it will redirect gas flow from the current point, located in an area under the control of Russian forces, to another one in a Ukraine-controlled area. Kiev blames Moscow for the move, but Russia's Gazprom says it's technically impossible to shift all the gas to a new transit point. The Russian company says it sees no proof of any obstacle that necessitates such a move. Gazprom says Ukraine is going to halt gas flows on Wednesday morning. Ukraine is a major transit route for Russian gas to Europe. Meantime, Western countries are working to phase out Russian energy imports. China accuses Washington of yet another provocation as a U.S. warship sails through the sensitive Taiwan Strait. A statement by the Chinese military calls the U.S. action deliberate, adding that it harms peace and stability in the strategic waterway. The U.S. Navy claims, however, that its warship only conducted a routine transit in accordance with international law. This is the second such incident in 2 weeks. China considers the island as its territory and views U.S. military activities there as a sign of support for Taiwan. Washington has no diplomatic relations with Taiwan, but it's the island's key backer and main arms supplier. Political analyst Sander Tangen from Beijing says the U.S. is provoking China because it's afraid of losing its superiority.
Currently, it seems that the U.S. has it's one-trick pony. It's continually trying to press issues. There's this desire for regime change, not only in China, but also obviously in Iran, Venezuela, you name it, and Russia itself. So this kind of ongoing pressure campaign, provocations, trying to get something to happen, and then trying to use proxies as a means of having any kind of conflict, not a direct conflict, but a proxy conflict. And this has been pretty much the game plan for the last few years. Biden does not seem to have any kind of master strategy that goes beyond it. The danger is that there is no clear exit strategy or end game. The U.S. is poking all opponents in all places, basically because it doesn't believe that anybody should have a regime that is not similar to the U.S. one, and quite frankly, inferior. They don't want anybody to challenge them.
Labour Party leader Sir Keir Starmer has pledged to step down if he's fined for potentially breaching COVID lockdown rules. Starmer and several members of his senior team are being investigated by Durham police after reports emerged that they had enjoyed a curry and drinks whilst assisting with a by-election campaign in the area. Labour officials have denied any breaches occurred, but must await the results of an investigation.
To tackle the immediate crisis.
Opposition leader Sir Keir Starmer has been at the front of the chorus, urging Prime Minister Boris Johnson to do the decent thing and step down after being fined for his part in a series of lockdown gatherings dubbed Partygate. Now the Labour leader has become embroiled in a controversy of his own, nicknamed Currygate, after being pictured enjoying a meal and a drink in what the party's calling a work event, but one being dubbed an illegal gathering by his opponents.
First and foremost, no rules were broken. I don't actually believe that those that are accusing me believe rules were broken. They are trying to simply drag all politicians into a place where the public think we're all the same. For me, this is an in-principle position. No rules were broken. I'm absolutely clear about that. But in the event that I'm wrong about that and I get a fixed penalty notice, I will do the right thing and step down.
Political observers think this is a risky strategy.
Well, I think that his advisers think this is a really good ploy to contrast him with Boris Johnson, who, of course, didn't resign, having been fined for breaking the lockdown regulations. But it's a dangerous ploy as well, because he's not in control of what the police investigation is going to find. And if he does get fined, he's now been committed to resigning as leadership of the Labour Party.
The Labour Party had desperately wanted to take the moral high ground when it came to their handling of COVID rules and regulations, not just in the House of Commons, but in the court of public opinion. But now with their leader caught in the spotlight because of his own missteps, supporters of Boris Johnson are hoping to capitalise on this political mistake and make Labour pay. Whether or not the leader of the Labour Party is fined, for many of the electorate, this is yet another letdown. Politicians who seemingly are unwilling or unable to play by the rules. The police investigation could take as long as a month to conclude. Now Labour and its leader must play the waiting game and cross their political fingers that this high-stake gamble has paid off. Mina Taylor, London.
Well, South Korea has inaugurated conservative Yoon Suk-yeol as president following a divisive election. While many people voted for Yoon hoping for principled, market-oriented government, many others are concerned about his stance in regards with North Korea. Frank Smith reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
Conservative Yoon Suk-yeol was inaugurated president of South Korea in a ceremony in front of the country's National Assembly. Although President Yoon has vowed to take a hard line on North Korea, his address offered Pyongyang conditional assistance.
If North Korea genuinely embarks on a process to complete denuclearization, we are prepared to work with the international community to present an audacious plan that will vastly strengthen North Korea's economy and improve the quality of life for its people.
The South's President Yoon's words may ring hollow for North Korea, as President Yoon has promised to bolster the country's military deterrent and strengthen its alliance with the United States. Some analysts suggest that may be destabilizing.
The U.S.-South Korea alliance will improve considerably in the next 5 years of the Yoon Suk-yeol administration. But North Korea's nuclear capabilities will be enhanced and tensions on the Korean peninsula will heighten even more.
South Koreans want President Yoon to address a raft of domestic issues as well, including housing and economic disparity.
Stabilizing housing prices is a priority for me, and I would like to have economic policies that can make a better living for both corporations and individuals, and cover blind spots in the current policies.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol wasted no time in demonstrating the hardline deterrent strategy his administration intends to take with North Korea. The U.S. and South Korean militaries began combined exercises with F-35 Joint Strike Fighter aircraft just hours before Yoon took office. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The Russian president has called on officials to do more to tackle deadly forest fires raging in Siberia in a virtual meeting with regional officials. Vladimir Putin warned that there should be no repeat of last year's fires, which were the biggest on record for the country. He said the blazes threaten both the people and the economy. The fires that erupted last week have claimed 8 lives so far and destroyed hundreds of buildings. High winds have hampered efforts to put out the blazes. Scientists believe soaring temperatures in Siberia as a result of climate change is the main reason for widespread blazes. Some 4,000 wildfires have reported in Russia this year alone. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Yani.
Bazaar. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taking years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In case you haven't already guessed it, this week we're going to explore the expansive world of catalyst. We wanted to see who the major players in this field are and some of the applications of catalyst. Now we will uncover how these tiny but mighty substances have made massive contributions to the national economy. It's going to be a fun one, so let's start the show. To familiarize ourselves with what catalysts are and where they are used, we visited a company specializing in making these items. Sarv Gas and Oil Company is a knowledge-based firm that has been active in this field for nearly two decades. This company makes a wide range of catalysts in 30 different types. Among its products, one can name catalyst used for the synthesis of formaldehyde, which is handy in the production of methanol. But that's not all. The products made here are extensively used to make raw materials with applications in numerous other production industries. Among its numerous achievements, this company has also obtained the know-how for making machinery and equipment necessary to complete various catalyst production chains. And that's not an easy task. A lot of hard work and science goes into making catalyst. That is why not all catalysts are created equal. Some are made with lower quality depending on the means and production methods, because catalysts are used to make other items through chemical processes. Having good quality catalyst is crucial in making high quality final products. This company serves two major roles: high-quality catalyst production and product development. As a knowledge-based company, the research and development department holds the pulse of these activities. It has dedicated much of its resources to furnishing its department with the latest technology to get the job done. Knowledgeable experts run its research and development department. Among its staff, this company employs engineers, scientists, researchers, and a whole host of other experts. Over the years, it has created hundreds of direct job opportunities as well. This company has overcome numerous obstacles to enjoy its many hard-earned achievements. One such challenge has been the U.S.-imposed sanctions. Some time ago, catalysts were placed on the U.S. sanctions list, so this company stepped up to the plate to fill in the market void, turning a challenge into an opportunity. With nearly 20 years of experience under its belt,
this company has gained significant ground in the market. It is also known for being one of the first businesses to export catalysts. As part of its future vision, it wants to manufacture machines and catalysts that will complete various domestic chain productions. Additionally, it strives to make Iran self-sufficient in the field of catalysts. Catalysts are broadly used to make metals. Powerhouse industries like Iran's steel and iron sectors rely heavily on catalysts for their outputs. Products from these industries are vital to downstream manufacturing sectors such as construction materials, cables, home appliances, and automobiles, just to name a few. All of these sectors are part of the process of adding value to materials that generate higher profits as well. Companies like the one we just mentioned play a big role in providing catalyst to the steel and iron industry. Based on figures from the World Steel Association, Iran is the world's 10th biggest steel producer. Last year, crude steel production stood at 27 million tons. That's in contrast to the year 2019, when the country produced over 30 million tons. But despite the apparent decline, Iran's world standing remains unchanged. Meanwhile, the government has implemented several plans to increase production in this key sector over the years. Industry participants expect Iran to climb to 7th place among global top steel producers by 2024. There are 30 active steel producers in the country with high production capacities. These companies receive most of the iron they need through domestic sponge iron producers. It might be interesting to know that Iran is the biggest producer of sponge iron in the West Asian region. That's going off of a recent report by the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries and Renovation Organization. The report also says Iran is globally ranked second in its productions, closely rivaling India at the top. Figures show that in 2020, domestic sponge iron production stood at 30 million tons, while India's was around 33 million. As we mentioned earlier in the program, catalysts are necessary to make numerous items. That is why they are considered a strategic product. And in Iran, these pocket rockets play a significant role in the country's oil and petrochemical industry. Remarkably, without catalysts, Iran's thriving oil and gas industries would not thrive as they are today. According to figures from the oil ministry, the country exported petrochemical and petroleum products worth around $20 billion in 2020. That is twice the value of Iran's crude exports. While most of the world's last refinery output during the coronavirus pandemic, Iranian gasoline exports rose in the year 2020. Going off of figures from the National Oil, Gas, and Petrochemical Products Exporters Union, exports hovered at 8 million tons that year. These gasoline exports generated an estimated $3 billion. Iran's oil and gas industry is still going strong, and there are many investment opportunities in this sector and its downstream industries. Aluminum is the third most abundant metal found on Earth's crust. It is used everywhere, from space capsules to soda cans, but that hasn't always been the case. Surprisingly, aluminum used to be more expensive than gold. In fact, it was so precious that Napoleon used aluminum utensils while dining with guests as a gesture of wealth. Before the 19th century, making aluminum was both expensive and difficult. The new methods for isolating alumina to make the metal were discovered involving electrochemistry. These days, alumina is still continuously studied owing to its vast number of industrial and technological applications. This week, we will talk about the vast world of alumina production, its various uses and markets. Plus, we will uncover how this seemingly simple item has made broad contributions to knowledge-based product development and the economy as a whole. So let's get started.
To become more familiar with Illumina and its related products, we visited Altus Illumina. It is a company that specializes in making fused alumina oxide. Now you might be wondering where fused alumina is used. Alumina has a very high melting point and is a crystal-type powder used in grinding, blasting, and cutting processes. Plus, it is an ingredient in various formulations to make things like fire-retardant glass and ceramic glaze. Fused alumina is also used to make various types of catalyst as well. Alumina doesn't quite naturally exist in nature. It is actually synthetically produced, which is no easy task. However, bauxite, which is the raw material alumina comes from, can be found in abundance in the country's mineral reserves. Bauxite ore is extracted from mines. Then it undergoes a refining process that includes digesting it in piping hot sodium hydroxide, where it's also electrocuted. Then it is filtered and fed to a rotary furnace where it dries at super high temperatures until it becomes a fine crystalline substance. The production facilities of this company are located in Khorasan-e-Razavi province. It is conveniently close to one of the largest bauxite mines in the country, where it gets the majority of its raw material. It might be interesting to know that a lot of the equipment and technology used to make alumina in the country have all been domestically produced. That is significant because this machinery was previously imported through difficult custom processes, which were often time-consuming and, more importantly, very expensive. So indigenizing technology used in knowledge-based industries to produce value-added products is key to expanding the size of related markets. The beating heart of this company is its massive and high-tech research and development department. This knowledge-based company has obtained the technical know-how of producing various grades of alumina. This department carries out studies on the structural, physical, and chemical properties of alumina oxide and improve its performance for different uses. Customers can also make special requests depending on the product they want to make. The research and development department then creates the optimal formula of fused alumina to suit the customer's needs. On another note, while fused alumina is produced in small quantities by other companies, the quality of these productions is often fairly low. This has led industry participants to look to imports to meet their needs. However, this company has saved the country millions in imports while matching international standards for product quality. Presently, this knowledge-based firm is standing on the cusp of exporting its products. It hopes to gain a high share of foreign markets to meet regional demands. This is easily possible as fused alumina is not abundantly produced in the West Asian region and is typically imported into the area. As part of its future vision, this company wants to expand this particular industry to produce high-quality products. It also wants to introduce new items that can be used in down-the-line industries. From laminates and paints to concrete, cement, and tiles, alumina is an important ingredient in numerous products. Iran is a leading producer of many of these items that it also exports to neighboring regions. But alumina is mainly used to make the metal we are all familiar with, which is aluminum. And Iran's market is thriving with aluminum ingot production skyrocketing in recent years. Official figures show Iran is among the top 15 producers of aluminum in the world. Last year, Iran produced over 400,000 tons of aluminum ingots, which is roughly 55,000 tons more than the year before. That is based on figures from the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries Development and Renovation Organization, also known by the acronym IMIDRO. Going off the figures from IMIDRO, the total production of aluminum has roughly doubled over the past 2 years. This comes as aluminum bauxite production surged by well over 13% in the same period. Last year, around 1 million tons of bauxite were produced. Meanwhile, the government is planning on increasing annual aluminum production to 1.5 million tons by the year 2026.
This means that alumina production must also increase accordingly. So, how many bauxite reserves are there in the country? Iran has one major bauxite mine, which is located in North Khorasan province. Jojaram mine has an estimated total of 30 million tons of reserves, but only 7 million tons of it are proven reserves. This mine is owned by Iran's sole alumina producing company, which is also owned by Imidro. So far, this company has explored and owned nearly 20 bauxite zones in various areas nationwide. But these zones are primarily used as extra feed for the Jojaram alumina refinery. Iran is well known for its copious mineral reserves. In fact, the country has over 60 billion tons of mineral reserves, of which some 40 billion tons are proven reserves. That is based on figures from the National Geological Survey and Mineral Exploration Agency. The Ministry of Mining says the productions in this sector are worth some $22 billion. But so far, productions haven't met this potential value. Industry participants say the country is not using all of its mining potentials. There are several reasons for this. One is the need to further develop the technology and research necessary to expand this sector. Areas that need more attention are geological exploration to discover new reserves and calculating mineable reserves. Plus, there are lucrative investment opportunities for engineering extraction and refining equipment. But that's not all. Once the results are in, related bodies with the know-how to conduct necessary material research are also needed to develop products. And here is where knowledge-based companies, such as the one we just mentioned, play a big role in the mining sector. Presently, there are well over 7,000 knowledge-based companies in Iran. One of this amount, nearly 900 of them, are active in the field of advanced materials and products that are based on chemical technologies. In its transition to a knowledge-based economy, the government has stepped up its support for knowledge-based firms and research institutions. Through the Science and Technology Office and the National Innovation Fund, the government has provided provisions that encourage activities in the mining field. Despite Iran being the third most sanctioned country by the United States, it has made major gains in its industrial developments and added value productions. Such efforts have led to self-sufficiency in many sectors.
All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear friend and colleague out there on the field who has prepared an interesting feature for you. Let's go check it out.
Today, we are visiting a company that matches buyers of agricultural products to farmers and removes the middlemen. Therefore, products will be delivered directly to customers from farm to table. And that's not the only thing they're doing here. Let's find out more.
Okay, now I'm just looking at the website that this company has. They've done something very important, and that is gathering, you know, farmers from all around Iran and then finding what sort of product each farmer is growing in his farm and then matching these farmers to buyers. For example, just look here, they've got different sorts of, for example, sesame from different producers in different cities. And why is this important? See, they've got a variety of products. Iran is a four-season country. It means that all around the year, there are certain products that are grown in different parts of the country. So when we do not have, for example, watermelons in one part of the country, the other part is producing them. So whenever a buyer wants to purchase watermelons, for instance, he can just simply find it here. And this is amazing. In addition to their website, this company also has an application, which is named Cafe Mife. You can order fruit and vegetables that are fresh and handpicked for your parties or ceremonies. And you see, here in this company, they have a special section that they pack these fruit, they sort them out first, and based on their quality, they pack them like this. And then they will send them directly to your houses. So let's go to that section and find out how they do it. In this line, they pack the products. Okay, fruit and vegetables that are fresh come here, and then they handpick them and categorize them into three groups: grade one, grade two, and grade three. Grade one is the one that has the highest quality and apparently looks better. It also has the highest price. Then customers go to the application and choose which one of these products they want. And then they just sort them and pack them like these and quickly send them to your house. From farm to table is a phrase you might all have heard. This means that buyers can directly purchase their products, which is fresh fruit and vegetables, directly from farmers. And this is exactly what this company is doing by cutting out brokers. Thank you.
There is so much more to say about this industry and its related trades. So without further ado, let's dive right into some news and trends in this field. As mentioned throughout the program, catalysts are important in boosting production in a whole host of industries. Now, Iranian experts have succeeded in domestically producing two types of catalysts used in the petrochemical sector.
It's a major achievement as the petrochemical industry makes 35 million tons of final products for downstream sectors and exports annually. The National Petrochemical Company says out of 85 types of catalyst used in this industry, 22 of them are domestically made.
Much of Iran's development and expansion of the oil sector is largely owed to its knowledgeable engineers. Such services are also being exported beyond the country's borders. Earlier this year, Iran entered an agreement with Romania to export technical services to the country's gas sector.
Based on the agreement, Iran would provide engineering services to construct gas transmission lines, storage tanks, and other necessary facilities in Romania. Plus, the arrangement seeks to explore joint investment opportunities in various fields, such as the feasibility of building refineries and power plants.
One of the trends we are seeing in the oil and gas sector is the government's determination to expand its developments. One path to achieving this goal is to increase collaboration with knowledge and research-based companies and academic institutions.
The plan for using domestic capacities for innovation in the oil industry has been put at the top of the agenda for years. One example is the massive Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, signed between the Iranian Oil Innovation and Technology Park with knowledge-based companies. This agreement covers a variety of areas, such as providing capital, developing artificial intelligence, and so much more.
With that, we are fresh out of time. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you next time for another edition of Bazaar.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli.
I think by now you've come to understand that Islam does have a lot to say as far as the economical side of a society is concerned. And the most important thing is that a Muslim must always remember the sensitivity of financial distribution. Baytul Mal, of course, has its own way of expenditure, but at the end of the day, we need to always remember that there are huquq, there are rights. When the Quran says, for example, وَلَا تَبْخَسُ النَّاسَ أَشْيَاءَهُمْ وَأَنْ لَيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى, the ayah says, وَفِي أَمْوَالِهِمْ حَقٌّ لِلسَّائِلِ وَالْمَحْرُومِ, that there are huquq, there are rights for a person who is underpoverished, a person who is underprivileged, a person who is poor, a person who has been deprived. The hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ فَرَضَ فِي أَمْوَالِ الْأَغْنِيَاءِ لِلْفُقَرَاءِ مَا يَكْتَفُونَ بِهِ الْفُقَرَاءِ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has imposed, has placed money that belongs to the rich for the poor, that would suffice the poor. So the problem here is there's not a fair distribution of wealth. There is not a correct consideration and compassion towards poor people. You know, when you hear about some very, very rich billionaire person, you know, building a school for a poor village and spending $500,000, they probably made that $500,000 in half a day, you know. And also, it's a lot of it is publicity stunts as well. I'm not saying that all of them are like that. You know, there are some individuals who might give away a lot, you know, but ultimately we need to remember, maybe we might have to come up with examples of not only our ma'sumin, salamullahi alayhim, but also someone like Bishr al-Hafi, for example. And we need to remember that when it does come to distribution, it's not only, doesn't necessarily need to be currency, doesn't need to be cash. It can be anything, it can be food, it can be property. But at the end of the day, it needs to be distributed fairly. And a person who does that, then of course they're always going to remember that the goal, the objective that they have is going to be for the sake of infaq, of spending. And that word nafaqa or infaq is frequently used in the Holy Quran. This verse, for example, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, آمنوا بالله ورسوله وأنفقوا مما جعلكم مستخلفين فيه. And based on this, when it comes to such an example, the hadith says that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave you these things in order for you to give them back and not for you to save and save and save all for yourself.
Ayatollah Javadi Amoli, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafati, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
There are many lessons
of the book
by those prophets. And
eat, take some in your hand, and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
When it does come to expenditure, when it does come to spending, when it comes to anything else that we're doing as far as our financial obligations are concerned, we need to remember that one pivotal characteristic that we always need to have, and that is balance. When we're talking about spending and observing balance, we need to remember that when you become bakhil and not spend anything, that is really bad. And when you become reckless and spend everything, that's also really bad. When you spend on yourself and not on others, that's bad. When you spend on others and not yourself, and you deprive yourself, that could also lead to something negative or bad. When you spend money and it's not overloading your financial capacity, but in a sense it's a kind of extravagance, that's also something bad. You know, you don't really need to have. And that's the problem with consumerism. That's the problem with capitalism. You know, today's consumerist world, you know, we're so absorbed into what it is that we need to have, that we think that we need to have, that is so new, so up to date. You know, we want to get rid of that television that we bought a year ago, and we want to buy that new ultra HD, 3D, whatever, with all the numbers and all the specs that are needed. And we want that now, we want that today, even though the cost will depreciate in another 2 or 3 months, and then we're going to go in. It's a bottomless pit. It's never going to finish. So when I did mention balance and being content, you know, when are you going to become content? When are we going to say, well, you know, the mobile phone that I have, at least, you know, it's working. I do need to charge it more than often, you know, and we hear about these conspiracies of these big evil companies, and I do call them evil companies. I'm not going to mention any of the names, but these evil companies that intentionally want you, suck you into purchasing their new items by sending you updating software, and this has become very clear. It's not a conspiracy anymore. They acknowledged and they admitted this. They send software that affects the battery and the lifespan of your mobile phone, so you're forced to buy a new phone. These kind of issues are really, really problematic because, you know, we enter into this vicious circle and we can't get out of it anymore, you know. And that's why we always need to remember to have that balance and be happy with what we have, be satisfied with what we have, because it really is never, never ending. You know, you could buy a little boat and then say, well, I'd rather have a larger boat, and then I'd rather have a yacht, and then I'd rather have that, and rather have that. And, you know, you can get up to the stage where it's you can purchase a $500 million boats, you know, but when does it stop? It won't stop, because that level of tamah and greed is always going to be something pushed by shaytan. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.